Hello, everyone. We're back. I know it's a bit of a shock hearing me talk because Rob never lets me talk. But if you didn't know, I'm Boats. I'm the one that probably used a lot in a lot of the tabloids for this pod. Rob makes me do so much stuff I don't want to do, but it's all for the love of the pod.
That's it. Sounds enthusiastic. We're meant to be coming in with a bang, Boats. Season two.
I like it, though. I like it. I like the added extras. I like it.
But here we are, the three of us reunited. It's great to see you.
Welcome back.
Well, it's quite exciting because we've actually got a sponsor for season two.
A title sponsor. Who'd have thought it? Can you believe it, Claire? So yeah, title sponsor, series two, is Redemption Roasters. They're my local, which is handy. And they're actually a really cool company. They work with prisoners. They train up prisoners in all things coffee. They offer them employment opportunities once they're released. They also do some work in the community. You can buy their kind of pre-roasted coffee online. You can also pop in. They've got 7 shops around London if you're in the area. So yeah, if you jump online, you can see all information about all the good stuff they're doing at their website, redemptionroasters.com. If you type in banged up 25, you get 25% off your order of coffee. And if you go in store as well and you tell them that you're a banged up listener, you get 25% off there as well. So win-win. You're welcome.
Win-win. I need to try one of these coffees. Next step, we can meet outside a coffee shop when the rules allow us and participate in a coffee.
Nice photo of the three of us all with coffees. Logo turned
out. Folks with a hot chocolate.
Exactly, because I don't eat coffee. I don't drink coffee.
Don't eat it, mate. That's where you've been going wrong.
That's probably it, to be fair.
Great. So let's tell people season two, it's a little bit different. The good news is the three of us are here reunited. For anyone who's a new listener, I'm Claire. I'm a prison lawyer.
I'm Boats. I'm an ex-con.
You're more than just an ex-con.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly. I'm someone who has been incarcerated previously and have come out and stayed out of trouble.
I'm Rob. And like Boats, yeah, I've had a little stint in prison, but I'm on the straight and narrow now. And on to season two of my podcast.
Let's keep it that way.
Yeah.
So season one, if you're going back, is hearing Rob and Boats' story. So if you haven't already listened to it, it is an in-depth account of from start to finish of their accounts of how they ended up in custody and their experiences. Season two, we're moving away from their experiences and we've got some fresh experiences. We are interviewing or have interviewed over the last couple of months in lockdown, 10 amazingly interesting guests, actually, a real variety of people that we've had on. We've had a prison officer, we've got a victim of crime, we've got a couple of other people who've served some time, some familiar names that you might have heard in season one. We've got an East End gangster, we've got an international madam. So we've stepped up our game, I think. What do you think, guys?
I think so.
Boats definitely
stepped his game up. We got...
Nah, but to be fair, I feel like in some of them, you don't hear my voice as much. So it's a bit of a... Yeah.
You're just active listening, were you, Boats?
Yeah, exactly. It's better to listen.
Taking it all in.
Yeah. He is a good listener, our Boats. He's a very good listener.
Someone has to be on this podcast, eh?
Exactly.
So let's kick off. Episode one, season two, we have got Laura. Rob, someone you know very well, you introduce her to us.
Laura, aka Babs, one of my favorite people in the world. Yeah, I think friend first, co-defendant second. I'm really, really excited for everyone to hear this. I think we all had such a nice chat with her and I think you'll hear what a kind of fun, lovely character she is and hell of a story. I mean, yeah, really went through the mill, I think, compared to, you know, the kind of bit of armchair ride I felt I had for a bit. So yeah, really interesting chat, telling us a bit about how different it is for her experience in women's prison. Looking forward to everyone hearing her story.
That's right. Laura received a sentence of 5.5 years. She served half. At the time of interview, she'd only been released just a couple of weeks. So we started by asking her how things had been since she'd come out.
I think that I'm still on honeymoon period of freedom. I'm actually still really, really loving life. Even the most mundane things, like prior to going in, I hate my job that I hated the most was going to get petrol and I still am loving getting petrol in my car. Even the most mundane jobs, I'm really enjoying still.
Well, that's good. All right. So yeah.
Just filling up other people's cars for them.
But yeah, I'm really enjoying life. I am working full time, which is good fun as well. And just catching up with everyone. I think I've managed to catch up with virtually everyone that I've wanted to, even during this hard time. So yeah, it's been nice. And just to celebrate holidays, anniversaries and birthdays with the people. And I know that I was on day release whilst in there, so I was still able to, as such, celebrate some, but without time restrictions on me. So yeah, it's ace still.
A burden's been lifted off your shoulders.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant.
Do you not feel like suffocated off, like, when you come out, everyone wants to see you, everyone wants to ask you the same questions? Is it not a bit draining?
Do you know what? I'm actually, it's not that bad, actually. I'm enjoying it. I actually it sounds weird, but I actually enjoy talking about my time, in the sense of...
Yeah.
I've been able to tell, because people...
How much stronger, kind of.
Yeah, and people also think of horror stories whilst in there. So I'm actually telling people what it was actually like, rather than what they thought it was going to be like for me.
Yeah.
And also, I've had to cut off some people, not in a sense of I've fallen out with people or anything like that. It's just that you realise who's there for you during the tough times. And obviously I had a long time, and I actually cut some people off without intentionally cutting them off as well, because I had to. And this is such a saying that I heard constantly whilst in there: you need to get your head in jail. And I was like, my head will never be in jail. I do not want my head in jail. But it was easier sometimes to put yourself a little bit in there, because you can't, it's hard to hear about everyone going on holiday or a friend's wedding or something like that, and you're not involved. So in that sense, I can see why people said you need to put your head in jail. But yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's a weird one.
I think that was definitely something both Boats and Rob spoke loads about, was that sort of sense of figuring out who your closer friends were, or what people meant to you or would do for you and stuff. And yeah, I know, Rob, you missed loads of weddings and stuff, and you spoke about that, didn't you? So
I think that was one of the hardest bits for me. Yeah, was missing. I think just at that time in our lives where lots of my mates getting married and stuff, and you just kind of try and put a brave face on it, but it is difficult to kind of just know that you're going to miss those kind of really special moments.
Like birthdays, and I spent 3 Christmases inside. That's a lot of Christmases. That's 10% of my Christmases I spent inside.
So take us back to the beginning. You went not guilty on your plea, so you ended up having a trial, and that was 5 weeks long.
Yeah, 5 weeks. I was on the stand for 3 of those days, which was probably one of the 3 hardest days of my life.
In what way?
It was tough. I didn't expect it to be like it was. Like I said, it was kind of like a game show. So I felt that prosecution wasn't that bad. And that they wouldn't really go into it too much, go into me, rip me apart at all. But then I remember going with my barrister on one of the lunch breaks, and he said to me, right, we're going to do some stat on the stand. Were you actually going to go on the stand? And we're going to do some practice. I was like, yeah, great. And I remember walking up there, and like when I started off, he was like, Laura, you're too confident with this. I was like, okay. He was like, I'm quite excited though to give my point across. And he said, no, I think that you're too confident and you need to be realistic that this is going to be hard. And I didn't realise what he meant until I was actually on that stand, and it was tough. It was so, so hard. I literally burst out crying on about 3 occasions. And it was my sister that was there with me on the day that I was on the stand. And I remember her just coming up to me at one point and just hugging me, because I was that hysterical crying.
Did you do that in like an actual courtroom then? Like, so you did a practice like on a stand, or was that just like in their offices?
Yeah, no, during trial. So about a week before I was due to go on the stand, my barrister, he was called Ed. He said to me, right, it was on one of the lunch breaks. And he was like, right, we're going to go and do some a proper, because we'd already done a little bit of practice in the office and stuff like that, but he wanted me to do it in the courtroom that I was going to be in and standing on that trial. And I remember walking up to the stand. This was when I was actually going on to it. And I always used to wear really high shoes. I could wear shoes a lot. And I remember before I went on to it, I was speaking to my legal team. I said, shall I sit down or stand up when I'm giving evidence on there? And my solicitor was like, I'd prefer you to stand up, because whenever you're on a phone or you're making an important conversation, you're often stood up. You portray yourself better. I was like, okay, that's fine. I'm happy to do that. And I wore just really high shoes on that day. And I walked up to the stand and the judge was like, would you like a seat? And I was like, no, I'm fine, stood. And like, he looked at my shoes and like looked at me like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, I'm fine, stud. And it just went downhill from there.
Did you have to take them off?
No, I didn't. I knew that I'd be fine standing. I'm used to wearing high shoes constantly. But like, he literally stared at my shoes. And he was like, you don't want a seat. I said, no, I'm fine.
Tough it out. Good. You stared him down there, Babs. 1-0 to Babs.
No, about 10 minutes later. I remember not having some evidence in the file that was on the stand. And I asked him for it. And he really shot me down for that. He was like, do not speak. I was like, oh, okay.
In the nicest way, in the nicest possible way, Babs, I can imagine you really rubbing a judge up the wrong way.
It's so mad, because what Laura's saying, I can resonate with her, because it's so scary. And it's so mad because, like, you know, the jury are watching you, so you kind of have to hold your tongue. You have to kind of keep your mannerisms, even though you're raging inside and there's so much emotion going through you. Like, it's difficult. It is difficult being on the dock.
So do you regret going on the stand read?
I try not to regret anything. I know it's a cliche saying, but everything happens for a reason, all of that sort of stuff. But I kind of wish that I did play it a bit differently. If I could do it all again, I'd have pleaded guilty at first instance and not say anything, not throw anyone under the bus, just go guilty and that's it.
Get a third.
And is that because... I mean, just to explain to people who might not know, the earlier that you plea, the greater discount in your sentence that you get. If you don't plea at all, you don't get, you know, if you go through to trial, you don't get any discount. So is your, when you look back and think, oh, I would like to have pled guilty at first instance, is that to avoid the trauma of the trial, or is that to reduce the sentence that you received?
I'm not sure, actually, because if I'd have pleaded guilty, we was on bail altogether, Rob, for nearly 3.5 years, wasn't we? So from the point of arrest to the point of trial was over 3 years. So I think that if we would have gone guilty at first instance and me thinking, right, I'm going to jail, I think that would have then been a hard, hard 3 years. Whereas I honestly, Rob, hand on heart, didn't think that I was going to prison at all. I thought what we'd done wasn't that bad. I didn't play full responsibility. So I was thinking, I'm getting suspended, I'm getting a fine here. And it was only July, so my, like I said, that trial was September, it was only July that I realised that if I was getting found guilty or if I went guilty, I was going to prison. So I'm kind of glad in that sense that I did, because those 3 years then, 3.5 years, I didn't have that worry. Obviously, we had the worry that I was on bail and something was happening, but I never thought I was going to prison.
Laura, did you ask your barrister what you could potentially get? Like, worst case. What did they say?
So I emailed my solicitor and I said, oh, actually, I haven't asked you. Worst case scenario, if I get found guilty or if I decide to go guilty, what am I looking at? And she emailed me back saying, this isn't a discussion we can have over email. Are you free to talk? And I was like, yeah, that's fine. She said, let me send you over some emails first to go through guidance of the app.
So I used to hate that.
And then, so I didn't look at them because they were so long.
I'll make a note of that.
Like, have you looked at those emails? I was like, yeah. And she's like, okay, great. But she said, remember, whatever I tell you now, we're in England, we're in the UK. So whatever you're going to serve half in prison. I was like, okay. So she's like, you're looking then at 6 to 10. I was like, okay, so I'm going to serve about 3 to 5 months. And she said, no, Laura, I'm talking years. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And that's when it really, really, and she's like, look, I really think we should still consider going guilty. I was like, not a chance.
if I'm looking at 6 years, no danger.
Claire, you see, like, obviously I know you're not a barrister, but like, do barristers purposely tell their clients worse, like even worse than what they would get? Because even for me, with the first case, which I got sentenced in the end for 16 months, he said to me, I'll get a 5. So obviously I'm like, fuck that. I'm not going to plead guilty. I'm going to run trial. But it's true though. Like, why do they purposely tell you worse ways?
I don't think that's everyone's experience. I mean, the way that our sentencing works in this country is that we've got sentencing guidelines. So it's never a definitive, you know, it's not a checkbox of being able to say this crime will definitely receive this sentence. So there's a bit of guesswork by the barristers anyway, because the judge has discretion as to where within a category of offence he's going to place you, depending on, he or she is going to place you, depending on, you know, what they consider to be mitigating factors or aggravating factors. So there's always that guideline. I mean, I think probably better to hear worst case scenario and then be pleasantly surprised.
And then sometimes that's going to make you want to run trial though. If you're getting told like a worse sentence, you're going to think, I might as well take the risk.
They told me 6 to 10 years. He sentenced me to 6 years, but they then gave me 10% off. So I'd literally got what my solicitor told me, the 6 years, but they gave me the 10% off for being good character, apparently.
Although I think it's safe to say you weren't on our judge's Christmas card list, were you? No. Sentencing. He wasn't a fan of yours.
He really wasn't, was he?
Did you realise during the trial, did you think that you'd be found guilty? Or was it a shock when the jury came back with their verdict?
Even though the judge wasn't a fan of me, I still thought maybe I could get a suspended sentence. Because, so during our trial, all through when we was on bail, we got unconditional bail, was allowed on holiday. When I was on trial, the box was left open and we can go to the toilet whenever we wanted and do all that, not ask. I was thinking, maybe I'm still up for a chance here.
And Laura, also, obviously you said that you ran trial and obviously it was a draining experience, but what was it actually like when the verdict came through and you were found guilty? Like, how did you feel?
So when I got led out the box to go down, I just collapsed on the floor. I literally had to be carried down. And I remember when I was in the cell downstairs, Rob, I had a big, big cell. I did. Mine was huge. And they left the cell door open. I might have even been put, I think there was talk of putting me on an ACT book, so a suicide watch, because I was that distraught about my sentence. And I remember I was massaging my shoulders. And obviously that's your shoulders and near your neck. And one of the women was like, do you feel like you're going to self-harm? I was like, no. And they was like, why are you touching your neck? And I said, oh, I'm just trying to calm myself down to like release some like tension and stuff like that. And she's like, are you sure you don't feel like you're going to self-harm? I was like, no, I'm fine, honestly. And I just remember being completely distraught, like uncontrollably.
I couldn't stop
crying. And yeah, they literally had to carry me. And I remember one of them going to put the cuffs on me. And someone at another one of the guards like, no, don't put them on her. So they literally just had to hold me. Yeah, it was tough.
And then even going from there, obviously you went to prison for the first time. What was it like? What was your first day like? Like your first night in the cell?
Yeah, so my first night was, I remember saying, I'm not sure I told you this story, but one of my first experiences in there was, we were sat down round by the servery, and I said to one of the girls, I was like, so who cleans our cells for us? And she was like, you do, Laura. I said, okay. And then I remember I was eating at this point then. So then I had my plastic plate and my plastic knife and fork. And I said, so where do we wash our plates? And she was like, in the sink in your room. I was like, the sink that I brush my teeth in and the sink that I wash my face in. Mm. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Yeah. So yeah. And then like the first, I remember I couldn't put any pictures up for at least 2 or 3 weeks. I couldn't even look at pictures because I was that emotional. And then I remember at Bronzefield, they gave you the post during the night. So it just go slot through your door. And I remember hearing that and I obviously turning my light on and reading my first letters. And I just bawled my eyes out. I literally sobbed my heart out at this point because I obviously it was everyone that was close to me, my parents, my sister, my closest friends and stuff had wrote me these letters. And I just felt guilt. I felt so guilty and heartbroken that I was here. And I remember I've got this notepad and I've still got it now. And at the front of it, I wrote my release date down. And I wrote it down, the date and how many days. And I wrote down my ROTL date, so my release and temporary license date, and how many days it was to that. And I just had to try and I worked out in like days, months, like literally every possible way. And I know that people say you shouldn't have a calendar and you shouldn't cross the days off, but every single day I crossed off my calendar.
Oh, it's making me quite emotional hearing that.
But But yeah, just those little things about like the room, who cleans it and stuff like that. I was like, oh, okay.
You said there you went into Bronzefield, first of all. For those that don't know, it's a private, women-only, high-secure prison. Physically describe it because there's lots of people that won't know. And I mean, even, you know, Robin Boats didn't go to high-secure prison. So, you know, tell us about the prison itself.
Yeah, so any notorious woman that, you know, has been sentenced is at Bronzefield. It's literally purpose-built, maximum security, privately run. There is about, to get from one building to another, you have to go through about 20 gates. Everything is fingerprint-proofed. So as well as the gates, you have to put your fingerprint in to make sure, so they know exactly where you are at any point. And yeah, I was sharing a wing with some really nasty, notorious women. So with women, it's different. You don't get the categories like the males, A, B, C and D. You either get open or closed. So even though I was in for fraud, I was classed at that point as a closed prisoner. So I was in the nearest closed prison to the court, which was Bronzefield at the time.
Did you have Did you have your own cell on the first night? Were you in, or were you in sharing with someone?
No, first two nights I had my own cell, and then because I was low risk, I went into sharing, and then I practically at Bronzefield I shared then. But with the sharing also, so Bronzefield was built, and then they closed down Holloway, so Bronzefield then got overly full. So single cells were turned into double cells. So the cells that I were in were made for one person and they just put a bunk bed on top.
Perfect.
Tiny. So
problem solved.
Absolutely tiny. They was literally minuscule. And there wasn't any like privacy around the toilets or anything because they wasn't built for two people. So there wasn't any of the curtains or anything like that. You had your toilet in the cell with you, with your pad mate, and which was tiny.
One of the things that the guys spoke about was a sort of a fear. Did you have that same sense of fear on your first night, or do you think that's maybe a different sort of male-female prison thing?
Yeah, no, I didn't feel fear, actually. I don't know if that was because I went on to like a bit of autopilot, because even when I saw some of the notorious women that was there, I didn't even feel fear then, which maybe a lot of people would have. Like, and Bronzefield was good in the sense of if ever the women that were in there were on TV, like the TV channel would go down for that evening, the magazines that you have in there would, the adverts would be ripped out. So they kind of tried to, even though I knew that some of these women were in there for bad things, I didn't know how bad until afterwards, because that's when you can see the documentaries and stuff like that, because they protect those women whilst I was in there.
Who was your first cellmate? Do you remember them?
Yeah, a girl that I still speak to, actually. She had roughly the same time as me, but she was London-based, so she went to an open prison then in London. So I didn't share with her for that long. But, yeah, we still speak now. She was a sweet girl. I didn't have all sweet people. I did have some not so sweet people, which was fun.
And what's the regime like?
So I was quite lucky in one sense. I never had, when I went in, I got quite friendly. I tried to be as nice and as polite as possible. So I got a job straight away on the wing, just doing either servery or cleaning and stuff like that. So literally I only had about 2 days in my cell with the 23 hours, and then they let me do that. And then I got a job in the salon there, which was a lot nicer. And I remember I was the receptionist at the salon, and because it's such a big prison, you don't really see that many guards as such. You don't see them all. You only see your wing guards. And I was on the reception once, and one of the officers come up to me, and I was like, they was asking me a question about a prisoner, about their paperwork. I was like, oh, I'll just get the tutor. And I was like, oh, are you a prisoner? I was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, you don't look like a prisoner. Oh, okay.
So can we rewind a second? Can you talk us through the salon?
Yeah. Do you know, the one at Bronzefield was so nice.
What, like a beauty salon?
Hair and beauty salon, yeah.
Oh, this already sounds a lot worse than male prisons. Hang on. So no, you had some spice head with a set of clippers.
That's not, there are barbers in the men's prisons.
What? Boats?
Yeah.
Nah, not the ones we was at, but there are.
I never went anywhere with a barber.
There are people whose official jobs it is in the barbers. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, in my experience, they were all spice heads.
What, did a cat give you a trim?
Yeah, in Rochester, Darnell. Do you remember him? Do you remember Darnell? He was good at table tennis.
Yeah.
Yeah, so exactly. So it was all funny little characters. We didn't have a salon.
Yeah, we had a salon.
They're not having their lashes done. I mean, half of it's for...
Well, you say that, Claire.
I don't know.
Babs.
Were you having your lashes done, Laura?
Were you having your lashes done?
I did have my lashes done once.
All right, take
no
it back.
Way. No way.
But a lot of it is the salon, or my experience of it, Laura, you obviously tell me yours, is that a lot of it is about being able to offer qualifications so that women can do qualifications so they can get jobs.
So I did my level 2 and level 3 hairdressing whilst I was at Drake Hall. Just to stay in the salon, basically. I wanted my blow dries.
Okay. So during lockdown, everyone was okay in your family. You could do the hair trims for them.
I was actually still in prison during most of the lockdown.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, but actually you weren't in Bronzefield. So I think if we just sort of go through, because you were in lower conditions by the time of lockdown anyway. So I guess in Bronzefield, I mean, or not just Bronzefield, a lot of the, you know, the statistics about women's prisons, that there's a lot more mental health, a lot of self-harm in comparison to men's prisons. Is that something you sort of experienced or saw or were aware of?
Yeah. So just going on to the second prison that I went to, Drake Hall, I was on the induction house with someone that committed suicide whilst I was there. She took her life because of her mental health. Her family disowned her for going into prison. Mm. And she was diabetic, so she did something with her insulin. That was obviously a tragic one, and there were so many people that tried to take their lives that I know of. It was pretty tough going with mental health, and that's one of the things that I think needs addressing in prisons as well. Like, I remember that when I got to Drake Hall, my mental health was a bit all over, and I actually asked for help, and I said I feel that my mental health is really deteriorating. Mm. So I had to put in an application form, which is a piece of paper, which you put into a box, which goes to an officer. And I remember having the reply back about a week later saying, maybe you should talk to a listener, which is another prisoner. And that was the solution to the problem that they fought. So,
yeah,
obviously, I'm a lot stronger than a lot of people. So imagine if that was someone that was weaker that back. Mm. It's tough going.
Yeah, definitely. And what were your relationships? What did you find the relationships were like with staff and with other prisoners?
So when I knew that I was getting sentenced and I was going to prison, and I knew that I was going to go to a London prison to start with, everyone was like, right, you need to get out of London because you've got the gangs and you've got not, you won't have nice girls there. But I actually felt the girls at Bronzefield was nicer than the girls in Drake Hall. They just seemed to have each other's backs more. And staff as well. Staff at, because Bronzefield is a private, so the staff there were completely different to staff at Drake Hall. And they got called by their first names at Bronzefield. And I remember when I then moved to Drake Hall, I said to one of the staff members, sorry, what's your name? And for example, they said, oh, Miss Jones. I was like, okay, so, and what do I call you? And she like looked at me, she's like, Miss Jones. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh. Okay.
Oh. Very formal.
Laura, were all the govs, were all the govs predominantly females, or is it just a mix?
A mix, complete mix.
Okay.
So the only ones that could pat you down, like going to visits and stuff like that, were female. But yeah, it was a mixture.
At Drake Hall, at the time, they had an open unit as well. So when they considered that you were low risk enough, you managed to transfer to the open unit, which in most of the men's prisons are separate prisons. You'd go to a physical, separate open prison, they call it, or DCAT. So, I mean, were you able, did you have the opportunity for, you know, rot or release on temporary licence from there? What was your experience of open?
So when I got sentenced to 5.5 years, Rob, 2 years extra served than you.
Quite right.
I did quite right. I actually, yeah, I didn't look at my end date because that was too far away. So I looked at my rottle date, which was actually 1 year and 4 months after. So it was the March of 2019 that my rottle date was, and that's when I could move to the open house at Drake Hall. And I'm not sure whether it was the only unmanned female prison or only unmanned prison in the UK. So it meant that there wasn't officers on the house at all. So the only officers that were ever on there was to do roll check, which happened at 6:30 in the morning, 10:30 in the afternoon, 2:30 in the ten thirty in the morning, 2:30 in the afternoon, and then 8:30 in the evening. And then other than that, there was no one ever on the house other than the girls. So that was, it was quite refreshing in a sense that we were just left to it. And the only way that I can describe that house was, it was like a Big Brother house. So I think it was only built about 5 years ago. So it was quite modern.
Worst series of Big Brother ever. Or maybe the best series
maybe
ever.
The best.
I don't know. Yeah.
Loved it, Rob.
Did so, but you were locked in, so you could, it's not like you could go out onto the high street, you were like locked into the building, but there's just no screws there, is that right?
Yeah, in a sense, but like, so we was then part of the community in a sense. So if I had to go to the doctors, I didn't go into the Drake Hall to the doctors, I had to go into the village. There was a village, so we didn't have canteen then on that house. We went down to the co-op and got our shopping.
That sounds like a much better transition into the community, especially for people who have done longer sentences than...
So that's what I mean. I think it was like one of the only unmanned prisons in the sense of that's what we did. So we had to do our own cooking, everything we had to do ourselves. And they just did the roll checks then at those 4 times. Yeah, so I had my car there and all of that sort of stuff.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's interesting.
I mean, that is...
Rob, you were before me at this point.
Rob's out on holiday by this point. Don't worry about it.
I was cruising. I was on tag at this point. Yeah, exactly. Let the minnows go. Yeah, I was fine.
And so that's where you were during COVID, or, you know, during the outbreak and then the first lockdown. Did they lock you back down? Were you still able to do those things, or did the prison go into lockdown?
So the prison went into lockdown, but because of we didn't have access to anything, we still could, we had to put in licenses. If we needed to go to the doctors, we had to put in a request to go, and then it would be granted if they thought that it was necessary. And then we had 2 hours a week to go shopping, so we could go to the co-op for every week for 2 hours. And we got, to start with, we had half an hour exercise. So the prison seemed quite a bit of a countryside. It would take, if you walked to the village, it would take half an hour. So we had half an hour worth of exercise. So we couldn't go anywhere, just round the countryside. So it wasn't as bad. And they let us, which was quite good of them, they let us have our mobile phones on the house as well. So we didn't need to pay for them. Yeah, but it was still tough going because I was used to being out every day from 6:30 a.m. till 8:30 p.m. each night.
So it felt like a step back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and living with 25 girls all on a house together, sharing one washing machine and one cooker was pretty intense at times.
Oh, shit. Would it be fair to say that the women can be quite kind of catty? What's the atmosphere like in the wings? Is it quite friendly or, did you find it?
It was a mixture. Obviously, hormones play a big part with women, so it was real mixture. Sometimes, like a bit of like you was living with Jekyll and Hyde, you didn't know who you was going to get each day with people. I tried just to keep myself to myself most of the time. Like I had a couple of close friends that I was really really close with, but yeah, it was weird because sometimes there would be orgies happening in the kitchen and other times they was fighting each other in the living room. It was completely like
What was your standout experience of your whole sentence or one of your standout experiences?
Okay, so this is one of my first experiences, so it's probably standout. So my next door neighbour at the time was in a relationship with quite a notorious woman in the jail who was also on our wing. She was in for life with no parole she was given. And she was an RS status, so restricted status. So that meant that she had to have an officer with her at all times. And I remember her sat my next door neighbour saying, right, Laura, I need you now to go and occupy the officer because we want to have sex. And I was like, okay. And I was like, how do I do this? And I don't want to say no. This is a notorious killer. So I was like, okay, how can I get... I can't even remember what I got speaking to this officer about, but I was thinking, I hope they're going to hurry up because I need to keep for a good 5 or 10 minutes, I was thinking, oh please. And I can't even remember the conversation I got onto, some politics or something like that. I was thinking, right, what else can I speak about? So yeah, that was
an unusual request.
Yeah, definitely. But that I couldn't say no, because it was, imagine my life, I just literally got there about 5 days before thinking, I can't make enemies here. Not with one of these people anyway.
Did you have a relationship when you went into prison?
I didn't actually, but a lot of girls do. It's a big, big thing in a women's jail. So they call it gay for the stay. So people that actually wasn't gay prior or aren't gay at all, they do for the stay. So they do whilst in prison. And I think that is because of comfort thing. Mm. Women need to feel loved and have that touch and that feel. But yeah, no, I didn't have a relationship.
Did you ever experience any violence in there, or did you see too much?
I didn't. Girls are more with their tongues, in a sense, like arguing. So I remember being in the meds queue at Bronzefield, and this girl had this massive black eye, and one of the officers was like, how have you got that? And she was like, I fell asleep on the toilet and I fell off. And then when the officer walked off, she was like, she was talking to another girl and said about this big fight that she had. But there wasn't many, really. There was talking of, like, it wasn't a fight, but it was different to this. But I was involved in a riot that happened because... So the
That's one up from a fight, to be clear, Babs. In the hierarchy, it goes riot, then fight.
People wasn't fighting each other. They was fighting me. The officers had to lock themselves into the stadium. Yeah, and then they had to bring the tornado squad in. So
you just want to tell people what the Tornado Squad is?
Yeah, so the Tornado Squad are the specialist team of like officers from all different prisons that are specialists in rioting. So they had to come into the prison to get it back under hand. But I feel that it's so with Drake Hall, I think it was kind of in a sense similar to what a male open would be like inside. So we had bungalows, which we called houses, and on those bungalows there was 20 bedrooms, all single. Most of the bungalows were like this anyway. 20 bedrooms, which were all singles. Then there was a living room area with sofas. Then there was a kitchen, which had a microwave, a fridge and stuff like that. Then you had your showers and then a laundry room. So the regime then was 8 o'clock from 8 o'clock in the morning till 7:30 on the evening. The front doors were opened. And then from 7:30 then till the morning, the front door was just shut and the alarm was put on, but you was allowed freely to walk around that bungalow. So at Drake Hall, I was never locked in my bedroom ever, which was quite good. But when the riot happened, one of the top dogs, as they're referred to, people would know them as, got put into the segregation unit. And she knew she was going down. So on that day, she said to everyone, right, on this evening, I want everyone to put their fire alarms off on the bungalow. So everyone's fire alarm went off at 8 o'clock that night, and the whole prison was just everywhere. Literally, everyone was just walking around. The fire alarms were that loud. You honestly couldn't hear yourself think, even when you was off the unit. So that's when the Tornado Squad, because on a night at Drake Hall, I think there was only 4 members of staff on to run the prison. So obviously 300 prisoners over 4 staff. So they just locked themselves into the seg and called the Tornado Squad in to come in.
Did you stay in touch with Rob during, or any of the other co-defendants during your sentence?
I didn't know. I cut everyone off just to deal with my sentence. So I just thought it was easy because I was thinking, I just found that my sentence was a long sentence compared to quite a lot of them, and I didn't want to hear about them getting out.
Yeah. That's understandable.
Sorry, Rob.
Do you speak about your different experiences now? Or like, Rob, is this one of the first times you've heard a lot of what Laura's said?
It's the most detail I've heard. Yeah, we have had a couple of calls actually, haven't we? And you talked through, and we chatted a little bit when you were, I think, probably right near the end of your, just before you came out. I think, like you said, when you were allowed your phone there, we chatted a bit then. But no, this is definitely the first of some of these bits I've heard, which is it's really interesting to hear how it differs. Because yeah, I guess you really don't know. And I mean, I think joking aside, I think it definitely sounds like, in some senses, definitely you got more freedom quicker than, I mean, look, I had a short sentence, so not compared to me, but let's say compared to Al, for example, I think you got freedom quicker. But I think in a lot of senses, yeah, like you were, you know, you were really thrown in at the deep end. One, you were on your tod. I mean, you were completely on your own, which must have been, I cannot imagine how hard that was to start with. And then in, like you say, I mean, when you got a serial killer telling you to go and distract the guards for you on day 5, I mean, fuck knows how I'd have dealt with that. So yeah, I mean, fair play. I mean, it sounds like you've come out smiling. I mean, I think that's definitely the thing that struck me. I think it's funny, from my last memory of you being you kind of inconsolable in the sentencing hearing, I really didn't know how it was going to go when we spoke, and you were just the old Babs, which was brilliant. You were so chirpy and like happy, and like you are on here, which was so nice.
How did your family take everything in general? Or, you know,
they were really, really supportive. So one good thing, Rob, about us having a 2-day sentencing, when I got into Bronzefield, I got put onto remand status on the first day of getting in there. And they didn't change me to sentenced. So I got a limited visit, which would have been great if I was local. But obviously 3 hours was quite a trek for people too. But I didn't get to. So yeah, when you're on remand status, you get a few more perks than you do if you're on sentence. So you get a limited visit and you get
more money on your spends.
More money, yeah. So which obviously then was costing my family loads. They was able to send me £50 in rather than £25, which was a bonus because I then got loads of credit and stuff like that.
Just by a computer admin, just a clerical error that they kept you on remand.
Yeah, they didn't swap me over, which was good.
Yeah, for sure.
But then when I went to Drake Hall, it changed because they don't take people from court from Drake Hall. So everyone at Drake Hall is sent as a sentence prisoner.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's when I went to a sentence and I had my 4 visits and stuff. I thought, now I'm closer to home. But, yeah, visiting was so much easier there. We was able to – there was a children's area. So when my nephew come to visit or a friend with her child come to visit, you could play in, like, a little soft play area, which was a lot better. But one time I was on a visit, one of the women was – in there with their children and she got dragged off because drugs were getting passed.
Oh.
So, which wasn't that fun.
Yeah, I think the visits hall, obviously like visits are good, but yeah, I remember Al had a visit in Rochester where his like mates came in and sat down, and then like on the other side of the room this bloke, one of the inmates just started assaulting his partner, like physically, like I think like clocked her in the face 2 or 3 times, and like, so there's some like shocking though in the visits. It's I think often because like emotions are heightened and yeah, people are trying intense. To like parts. It's where lots of people like get hold of drugs and that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's quite full on, I think.
Laura, you've been so amazing and so open with us, and it's been so interesting. Thank you. I think I've got 2 final questions for you that we want to ask all of our guests their opinions on. Just a quick fire round for you. So the first one is, if you could change anything about the criminal justice system on an unlimited budget, no red tape, what would it be?
So I've got 2.
Go on then.
Okay. One is the jury. I don't think that there should be a jury because they don't understand. I think one of them fallen asleep in mine, and then they were all of them try to not be involved in it. So, and I do think that if I, obviously I can't now, but if I did the service, then I think that I would just go with the majority to get myself out of there as quickly as possible, especially after the 5-week trial. So that's one. And the second one is to do with actually going to jail for rehabilitation. I'm very good at being able to box tick, so I could tick the boxes to get where I wanted, but I had no rehabilitation. There was no therapy. There was no counselling. And this isn't just for me, for anyone in there that I saw. I didn't see any help whatsoever. People was put into jail, put into jobs like in the kitchens, in the bins, stuff like that. But there's no actual rehabilitation. So they serve their time and they come out to nothing, a lot of people. So that's the second one.
Yeah.
Just quickly in between that, do you think it has changed you, Babs? Do you feel any kind of notable significant changes since?
I think I'm more grounded. Yeah, and I don't take things for granted, like the little things in life now. So yeah, that's one thing. But I don't think that was. I think that's just because I've been a normal person, and I think that even if I would have just been. Didn't go to prison and I had got a normal job afterwards, I would have been a bit, I'm not sure, maybe.
Yeah. It's a difficult one to answer, yeah. Isn't it? But yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
All right, my second and final quickfire question for you, Laura. You get sentenced for a year. Who is your dream cellmate, dead or alive? This once you got over the shock of going back to prison.
This is going to be really boring, but one of the girls that I shared with, we was best friends in there, and we shared.
That's nice.
I think it was about 9 months that we shared for. There's 2 of them that we, because we had a dorm with 3 people, and we didn't argue once. We literally just laughed from the start of the day to the end of the day, and there was not one crossword. And you know what? Sometimes you think, oh God, they're really starting to piss me off someone. No, we never had that. We were literally the last best friends. So
that's brilliant.
I know that I would say it would be them.
Well, that is great to hear. So
that's a nice note to finish on, I think.
A result,
it?
Yeah.
That was probably nice
well
to be
done,
fair.
Babs.
Thank you.
Babs, thank you so much.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for having
so
us.
So much for coming on.
Thanks.
Oh, Babs, she was good. To be fair, I really enjoyed her story. Like, she's got a good vibe. She's got a good vibe about her.
She does.
What an absolute legend. Yeah, she is just, she's one of the good ones, isn't she, our Babs? Also, one thing we didn't touch on in there was what I should encourage people to find her and ask her about her summer dieting tips. She used to proudly and famously tell us that her way to get on her summer diet was no more than 2 days before going on holiday, she would reduce her diet to purely Monster Munch. So go and tap her up for
that. A great diet.
Which fair I respect.
Yeah, fair play to her.
Well, episode one, brilliant start. Episode two coming next week. Who have we got? Rob, tell us.
We've delved into mine and Boats' little black books again. We've dug out our good friend, Quaddy, who is, I mean, honestly, I say this a lot, one of my all-time favourite characters. In Rochester, I used to follow him around like a puppy dog, just watching him. I love him.
You actually, the thing is, he actually did as well. You actually did used to follow him around.
We used to just go for walks. Oh, I could just listen to him. It was brilliant. Just one of my favourite people. Proper bromance that was in Rochie.
I've got a funny story about Quaddy quickly. I remember once we was in a cell and he was on FaceTime to someone and he was holding it up as a selfie. And I was like, why are you doing that? He was like, oh, I thought you get better signal when you do it that way. That just sums him up.
Well, like holding the phone up as if it's closer to the sky.
Yeah. He said that's what you get, better signal.
Don't you need to be a bit more subtle with your mobile phone in prison?
Well, yeah. It was Rob's phone that we were borrowing as well. It was Rob's phone that we were borrowing.
Oh, we're all coming out now, isn't it?
Here we go.
Right, so stay tuned for episode two, Quaddy, next week. Please come back. In the meantime, sign up to our Instagram. Rob is going to be asking a question to our followers that we are going to pick up on next week. So watch that space once he thinks of the question.
It's going to be a weekly theme. Every week on Instagram, we're going to be asking a question so you can get involved, and we'll be kind of talking about that in the following episode. And also don't forget redemptionroasters.com. Jump on there, use the code bangedup25 for a little bit off a delicious coffee.
See you next week, guys.
See you next week.
See you guys.